Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Quick question for you. What David Lynch movie reminds you most of The Wizard of Oz?
Well, we're waiting.
Chances are that you said Wild at Heart. And yes, there are definitely some Ozian moments in that film. The drive to New Orleans, could it be interpreted as the yellow brick road? And let's not forget the clicking of the heels. But director Alexandre Philippe would disagree. He says that Wild at Heart is the least Ozian film in the LCU, Lynch Cinematic Universe. Alexandre's latest documentary is called Lynch Oz, and as the title suggests, it explores the parallels between Lynch's films and The Wizard of Oz. Lynch Oz includes commentaries from several film critics and directors like Amy Nicholson and frequent Beta guest, the Prince of Puke, John Waters. Collectively, they paint a fascinating connection between Lynch's visions and Oz. So, I sat down with Alexandre to find out why he wanted to make this intriguing film.
Well, you know, I've been a Lynch fan for a long time. I mean, he's one of those sort of transformational filmmakers for me. And, you know, I came into The Wizard of Oz rather late. You know, I grew up in Switzerland, in Geneva, and, you know, The Wizard of Oz is not the quintessential fairy tale in Europe. You know, it's you don't really see it on television at all. So I discovered, you know, The Wizard of Oz in my, I think, early 20s and just really blew my mind. It's a film that, you know, I've spent a lot of time with, and a lot of time sort of, you know, thinking about and deconstructing and teaching and so on and so forth. And then obviously, you know, when you're plugged into, you know, the sort of the David Lynch fan culture, you know, clearly this is something that's been floating around for a while, right? I mean, fans have been talking about the connections between Lynch and Oz in you know, on forums and you know, some of these sort of like mirror images, if you will, just keep popping up in culture every now and then. And of course, when you get to pick the brains of people like, you know, John Waters and Karin Kusama and David Lowery and so on and so forth, of course, you're going to discover incredible things.
Absolutely. Very well said. And it's interesting that when we think of the connection between the Wizard of Oz and a David Lynch film, we tend to think of Wild at Heart. But you say right. That there's overwhelming evidence to suggest that every David Lynch film is his own version of The Wizard of Oz. Can you give us an example or two?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, first of all, I would make the argument that Wild at Heart is the least Ozian of David Lynch's films. I mean, yeah, you can absolutely map out these images from Oz, some of which are clearly conscious. I mean, gosh, Twin Peaks The Return is chock full of very conscious references, but I think, to me, the most interesting ones are the ones that are probably not conscious. I mean, I think we all certainly know David Lynch as a very intuitive, you know, filmmaker, right? Who does obviously transcendental meditation, you know, who taps into, you know, these other worlds in a way. And I'm absolutely convinced that there's a number of, you know, moments in his cinema that tap into the vernacular of The Wizard of Oz in a way that is not necessarily conscious to him. And I think that's where it gets really interesting, because the larger argument for me of Lynch Oz is this idea that, you know, every filmmaker, in fact, every artist, when you grow up, you know, there's a handful of foundational texts, you know, these movies or paintings or experiences that really move you profoundly as a kid. And when you are moved, and you know, to that extent, you grow up, you become a filmmaker, you become an artist, and then in a way you're sort of trapped by them. Mm-hmm. And they keep showing up again and again and again in your work, but you know, but that's not a reductive thing. It's actually a really, really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Your film is narrated by 7 different people, including the movie critic Amy Nicholson and filmmakers John Waters and Rodney Asher. And you break up the film, you organize it by chapters. And chapter 1 is called Wind and features film critic Amy Nicholson. The rhythms and tone of Amy's voice blend so well with this subject of how Lynch uses wind in his work. What do you think the big takeaway? What is the most important thing we've learned from Amy's essay?
Amy was the first one I reached out to. I didn't know she was going to be the first chapter, but I really loved a number of the things that she said in her podcast episode on The Wizard of Oz. And I think she's really important because she grounds the narrative in the significance of The Wizard of Oz in culture, which is a very important sort of starting point, and creates these very strong 101 connections, if you will, with between Lynch and The Wizard of Oz.
There's this very small detail at the opening of The Wizard of Oz. Right when the title comes up on screen, you hear this gust of wind. But it's not a sound effect. It is humans sounding like a gust of wind. They're going, woo. And then when the house starts to swirl around, it is the absolute cacophony inside of this tornado. And then she lands, and this entire movie goes silent for the first time. And that silence clears the table for the audience. And then the music kicks in, and you start to hear the Oz theme, and you get a little gust of that human wind sound again. And you have to wonder if those same winds are the ones we hear in David's films.
I think it sort of starts the narrative of the film in a place of sort of safety, and which of course Rodney Asher in his next chapter just completely, he takes us in a very weird and dark place after that. But that was sort of the intent, is to pull the rug from under people's feet after Amy's wonderful chapter. But yeah, I think she really establishes the main connections. The other participants then sort of go into different directions after that.
Mm-hmm. And she, one of the many great things she said was this part about Dorothy and David Lynch both know that adventure cannot be planned. They can only be approached with the right attitude. And I thought that was like a very, very interesting and incisive observation. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the Baron of Bad Taste, John Waters. He's got his own chapter, and he talks about his love of The Wizard of Oz. And I was surprised when John said that he thinks David Lynch and he have a love and a hate for 1950s America. Do you see that love and hate in Waters and Lynch's films?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and in fact, I think not only do I see it, but I think, David, my editor, and I, David Lawrence, we spend a lot of time illustrating that, I think, in the film. You know, the really cool sort of element about this chapter, and the really fun part for me was to go through John Waters' filmography again, and to start really looking at it now through the lens of Oz. And it was astonishing. I mean, it's not quite to the extent of David Lynch, but my goodness, I mean, almost every film has these elements that, you know, that speak back to it, and that have, that are also rooted in these sort of 50s elements, even though, you know, the narratives don't necessarily take place in the 50s, but there is that sort of 50s vibe to it.
The people that are my heroes or heroines would have been the villains in other people's movies. And the villains in my movies are usually people that are more middle of the road and judgmental and don't mind their own business. Now, Miss Gulch didn't mind her own business.
I want to see you and your wife right away about Dorothy.
I make the same film. The moral is the same. Mind your business. Exaggerate what people use against you, turn it into a style, and win. All my movies say that.
We find the defendant not guilty of all charges.
They're different characters, but the moral of all my movies is definitely the same. David might agree with that with his own movies.
And I love this great moment, I think, when John Waters says, I don't know if there's any, he's like thinking about sort of like actual clear references to The Wizard of Oz in his films, you know, conscious references to The Wizard of Oz. And then, of course, there's this incredible moment in Mondo Trasho, where, you know, she's it's Ming Stoll, I believe, she's clicking her heels in the mud several times, and then poof, you know, vanishes. And I'm like, wow, you know, what a what a find that is, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. The filmmaker Karin Kusama explores the theme of multitudes in her chapter, and she has some really interesting ideas about Mulholland Drive. I'm especially interested in her idea of the dream within the consciousness of Naomi Watts' character. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, what I love about her chapter is that she really zeroes in on Mulholland Drive. I mean, she really, really focuses on that one film. She, I think, very strongly makes the argument that it is the most Aussian of all, you know, the Betty Diane, you know, characters, and, you know, again, this idea of characters having their own counterparts in both worlds, and what is real, what is not real.
There's something so deeply moving about this strategy, because it's saying sometimes we learn more about a character not from their reality, but from their dreams.
Hey, pretty girl. Time to wake up.
Mulholland Drive is an inverse of Oz, in that the home we return our Dorothy to, in this case, Diane Selwyn's, is not one she wants to return to. It's a much darker register of the Oz narrative.
There's a lot of ideas, you know, in her chapter. I think what, for me, the greatest takeaway of what she talks about is this, the optimism, you know, that as dark as, you know, Mulholland Drive is, and some of David Lynch's cinema really is, that there is this sort of optimism, you know, that you have a character who's projecting herself as the best version of herself, you know, and that through that we get to appreciate her more as a character. I think there's something really beautiful about that. So yeah, it's one of my favorite chapters for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned how Karin actually kind of makes the case that Mulholland Drive could be the most Lynchian film. I think that's what I found that so interesting, because before I, you know, heard her talk in her chapter, I would think no, Mulholland Drive is like the least Aussian, but no, she just nailed it. She's absolutely right, and I agree with her that the standout scene in Mulholland Drive is the audition with Naomi Watts Chad Everett. What's your take on this scene? I think it's a great scene.
Well, I think this scene for me is greater because you get to experience it first as, you know, Diane, who's not a good actor, rehearsing the scene at home and sort of making fun of it. And then you see Betty just nailing it. So it's to me, it's that it, you know, in a way, it sort of reminds me a little bit. I'm thinking about the Seagull by Chekhov, you know, the play within the play, which is played twice, you know, and the second time around, it gains a resonance because of what's happened, you know. I love those sort of moments of repetition, but it's what happens in between that gives the second time its weight. You know, it's no longer played out as a joke. It's really intense and serious and important all of a sudden, you know.
Absolutely. Very well said. You've made documentaries about Night of the Living Dead, the Psycho shower scene, which we had you on about, the origins of Alien and The Exorcist. And the film critic Owen Gleiberman says that you have basically made a quartet of documentaries about the four key horror landmarks of the last 65 years. Was that intentional?
No, it wasn't intentional. And in fact, you know, there's one missing from the lot, but we're about to tackle, and that's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's not forget that one. But yeah, so that's something we're going to be tackling pretty soon.
So besides Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I'm curious about what's left for you to make a documentary about. When we talked the last time, you said that you would probably be doing more Hitchcock. Is that in the plans at all?
Yeah, 100%. There's two films we're about to start working on. You know, the other one is actually you know, Hitchcock related as well. I'm not going to say much about that yet, but I mean, you know, it's endless. To be honest, you know, I think the more you know, the deeper I dig into these great movies and their resonance and their mysteries, the more, again, the more mysteries start revealing themselves to me, and there's, you know, more areas that I want to explore, doors that I want to go through, and things that I want to discover, and people I want to talk to. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's curiosity at the end of the day. I mean, I'm obviously very, very curious. I'm obviously a very passionate cinephile. I enjoy the process of doing what I do and sharing those films with audiences and working with the people that I work with, who are all wonderful. It's just a great team, you know. So yeah, I feel like I'm just getting started, to be honest.
Excellent. That's good news for us. Alexander Philippe, thank you for talking to us today. Congratulations on Lynch Oz. It's a very entertaining and very enlightening film.
Thank you.
Alexander Philippe's latest documentary is Lynch Oz. Follow the Yellow Brick Road over to wpr.org/beta to find out more. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Rachel Cochran, Aisha Harris, and Alexander Philippe.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Special thanks to Tyler Ditter, who mixed this episode.
It's just that he was on fire.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Our executive producer, nay, showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Shucks, folks, I'm speechless.